Vital Self-Confidence, Episode 302.
Welcome to the Tao of Self-Confidence, where I share stories of amazing women who have discovered their inner journey to self-confidence. Visit our website at thetaoofselfconfidence.com. Your inner journey to self-confidence awaits.
Well, hello, friend. Welcome to the Tao of Self-Confidence, where I share stories of amazing women who have discovered their inner journey to self-confidence. I'm your host today, Sheena Yap Chan, and today I have a phenomenal lady on the show today. She is a comedian based in Miami, Florida. I'm just really excited to have her on and share her story with us on self-confidence. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Rhett Thompson. Rhett, how are you today? Maybe you can fill in a little bit more about yourself to our listeners.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. I am so honored to be here. Definitely to be on the Tao of Self-Confidence. So yes, I am a comedian. I'm currently based in Miami, Florida, but I grew up in a very upper poverty, lower working class neighborhood in Akron, Ohio. What? Akron, Ohio? Land of LeBron James. My mother is Japanese and my father is African American. And yeah, I grew up in the Midwest and made my way to live in New York for quite a time and then ended up in Miami. So here I am.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that with us, Rhett. And you know, what would be your favorite self-confidence quote?
Well, my favorite self-confidence quote is a quote that was etched into the school auditorium of my alma mater, which is unfortunately no longer around anymore, Central Howard High School. On the top of the auditorium, there was a quote by Abraham Lincoln. And every time we would have an assembly, I would look at it. So it was like burned into my memory. So the quote goes, "I will study and get ready, and perhaps someday my chance will come." It's either someday or one day. Sometimes it flips around. But so I look at that, and it's a motivator for me to just really understand that every day is part of a journey. And, you know, you're going to have your highs, you're going to have your lows, you're going to have excitement and disappointments. But every day means something. It's going to get you to a point where there's going to be an amazing opportunity for you, but it will only be available for you if you've prepared already. So that, and I think that that has a big deal to do with self-confidence, because there are times when you're not feeling very confident about yourself and there's a lot of self-doubt and wondering what is the point of me doing this or existing or doing this work or whatever it is. But you have to understand that it will all pay off when that opportunity hits, but you just have to keep on going.
Thanks for sharing that. And I love that quote, right? Because a lot of us, we feel like when we're doing something or trying to get ready or learning something new, we feel like we're not going anywhere, not realizing sometimes it might take a while, you know, like Bruce Lee mentioned, like fear of the man who does one kick, you know, 10,000 for 10,000 days or something like that. But he's just saying that when you do it every single day, I mean, you build your confidence and that chance will come. So, you know, I really love this quote that you mentioned by Abraham Lincoln. And, you know, in your own words, how would you define self-confidence?
This is a toughie. To me, self-confidence is living life on your own terms. Basically, feeling good about yourself, your existence, understanding that there, you know, it sounds like a cliche, it really does, but really, truly, there's no one on earth quite like you. So you're the only one who can be you and can live like you. So once you understand that and are okay with the decisions you make, the choices you make, understanding that sometimes you're going to do great, sometimes you're going to make mistakes, you know, you can only be you. So live life on your own terms. Do not push yourself to be like someone else, because, you know, there's no point of begging. Don't beg to be part of someone else's party. You know, that's the worst. Like when you're desperate, like you hear like, oh, everybody's going to have fun over there. That's fine. On the other side, I totally would love to be part of that. That's great. But don't beg to be part of that. If anything, make people beg to be part of your party. And they're only going to do that if you already have your own thing going on and you're going to have your thing going on because you're confident about the choices you make.
Awesome. Well, I love that definition that you mentioned. It's so true, especially, you know, growing up Asian, it's like we've been told to like be somebody else, not realizing like that really just hurts us in the end. And it's,
yes,
like, it's draining, you know,
yes,
it's something we all can relate. And, you know, I mean, I'm sure you've gone through some of that. I mean, what was it like for you before your discovery of self-confidence?
Oh my gosh. It was very, very challenging. Very challenging because my mom is Japanese and my father is African American. They did not stay together terribly long. I was 4 when they got divorced. And my mom, you know, she has a big respect for Black culture, but at the same time, you know, she is a Japanese woman. You know? So, you know, here we are growing up in this, you know, this predominantly Black neighborhood, and there was no one else quite like us, you know. And it's tough enough when you want to fit in. I really wanted to fit in somewhere, and I felt that I felt like I stood out for all the wrong reasons. I didn't understand when people would meet me for the first time, they would automatically, it didn't matter if they were white or Black or whoever, they automatically knew that I had some type of Asian ancestry in there. They would always ask me, are you Chinese? And I'm like, that is the only ethnic group people in my neck of the woods knew. Like, there was no Japanese, no Vietnamese, no Laotian, no nothing. Everything was like, are you Chinese? And I began to resent that because I wanted to just not be, I wanted to be pointed out because I was, you know, I had the right shoes or I had the right clothes or I had whatever, you know. So I'd go home, you know, so here I am going out to the outside world and trying to deny that part of myself or downplay that part of myself. And then I would come home and my mom would tell me, you know, I would actually be reprimanded if I wasn't acting Japanese enough. Like if I was very outspoken, if I sounded like I was like questioning for the wrong reasons, if I sounded like I was talking back, if I wasn't as obedient as I should be, my mom would always say, oh, you're not being a good Japanese daughter. And I would be like, well, I'm in Ohio. There's no one else that I can copy off of. There's no role model here. because the only other family that had my same family combination, they lived on the other side of town. So we would only see them like maybe once a week or so. So for me, because it was very racially divided where I grew up at that time, you know, you had to pick a side. You were either Black or you were white or you were, you know, asterisk other, you know, I wanted to fit into one of those groups. And you know, having an Asian mom did not fit in with that. So you kind of had to downplay that. And it was difficult because I wanted to be proud of who I was, but I didn't understand that, you know, just because someone's pointing you out for being different doesn't mean that that's a negative thing. And it took me a long time for me to reconcile all of that, you know, because when something cool would happen, a cool Japanese thing would happen. Like if we were studying Japan in school, like everyone would turn to me and all of a sudden I was an expert. And that was great for those 4 days out of the year, you know? But now I realize that me being an outsider in my community was actually probably the best thing that happened for me because my perspective on the world is a lot different than my classmates growing up. And I do appreciate that. Yeah, it was a challenge, but I've survived.
Awesome. Well, thanks for sharing that. And I'm sure, you know, a lot of, you know, kids who are mixed race, you know, they felt the same way. I've interviewed past guests who also felt like they didn't really know where they belong. You know, they just were this, like you said, the asterisk. You know?
Yes!
And it's not easy sometimes. I mean, even just growing up in Asia, you know, in kindergarten, I mean, the teacher failed me for coloring outside the lines. And for the longest time, I thought something was wrong with me because I colored outside the lines, not realizing like I was meant to be different. And when we see things like you mentioned in a different perspective, that's when, you know, you can start living the life the way that you want. And, you know, what was that aha moment in your life when you realized like, you know, you're more than enough. You can go out there and be the person that you are today. What was your aha moment?
You know, it was definitely a journey. I do think that for me myself, I had to be exposed to people that were similar to me, not with my exact racial makeup, but maybe they had like a similar story to me. So meeting people that, you know, they were the only folks from their country that lived in our neighborhood, or meeting people in college who also had challenging circumstances. You know, their mom or their dad did not have English as their first language, and seeing how strong that they were. You know, I mean, you still have to survive in this country. It doesn't matter, you know. But I think for me, the big, big, big aha moment was when I moved to New York and I saw a lot of folks that, not a ton of folks that looked like me, but just enough that to understand that, hey, you know, I'm not alone out here. I am someone here. I am, I do belong. I do fit in, and I should embrace my difference. The big, big thing for me was it kind of runs parallel to my voice or my persona as a comedian. It's very similar to my growing up in that, you know, when you start off as a performer, as a comedian, in the beginning, you tell yourself, or at least I told myself, that, oh, I want to be marketable, and oh, I want to be on a sitcom, and oh, I want to be a clean comic. I don't ever want to say dirty words, and I don't want to be controversial. And, you know, all these things that you don't want to be. I don't want to be this. I don't want to be that. But the thing is, when you're telling yourself what you don't want to be, you know, that kind of limits you in some ways. You know, so I'm doing my best that I can fit in to what I think other people will see as a potentially marketable comedian. That's the same way as I was growing up being half Japanese and half Black. It's like, I will be whatever you want me to be. If that makes you feel comfortable about me, I will do that. But you lose a piece of yourself when you do that. And one day I was having a conversation with one of my friends from back home in Akron, and who is not a comedian. And, you know, he always liked to hear about, you know, all the, you know, ups and downs of comedy, you know, like living vicariously through me. And one day he said, why do you need to be liked? that threw me off. I was like, what do you mean? He was like, you know, you keep saying that, you know, you need people to like you. Why do you need people to like you? Because he came from a corporate background, and he was like the only person of color in the room sometimes. And even though he had the knowledge and he had the background, you know, he was like, look, there's sometimes I walk in the room and people automatically, for whatever reason, automatically have made up their mind. They don't like me. They don't like me. They totally discount me. They don't believe in what I have to say. They always want to, you know, second guess me. So if that happens to me out there, why do you feel like, you know, once you tell yourself, I don't need everyone to like me, but the people that like me, they're going to love me. And those are the people that you have to, you know, to push toward. So once I came to that realization, like, it was like a gigantic weight had lifted off of me, because now I'm not walking around trying to please everyone, you know, and that I'm not this type of comic or that type of comic, or I'm not, you know, I'm not Asian enough. I'm not Black enough. I'm not woman enough. I'm not, you know, whatever enough. I'm just me. And once I did that, it made my life much, much more easier and much more satisfying.
Thanks for sharing that. And I think that's something we all go through, right? Feeling like we're never enough. It's like we need to feed off other people to feel worthy, not realizing like it's all within us. And then like, I get
yes.
I get it. Cause I, you know, I still feel like that. It's like, oh my God, why do I only have 10 likes on Facebook? And you know, it's just like little things like that make, you know, make us realize like, why are we needing from all these people? Like, you know, if we just be the person who we are, they'll come to us anyways. You know, we'll start attracting the right people. And like you mentioned, you know, a weight's been lifted off of you because you finally realized you didn't have to need, you know, the approval of others. You know, you are enough. And because of that, what's your life been like now?
Right. Well, the thing is, what's tough is like, you know, that made me think about the family that lived on the other side of town when I was growing up. My mom, you know, she would have these phone calls like with the other mother who was Japanese, who was married to an African-American guy. And me and their oldest daughter were roughly, well, she was a couple years older than me, but it just seemed like every single time. I liked when my mom spoke to their mom because it gave her a chance to speak Japanese, and they would be on the phone for hours, and, you know, they would gossip and talk about whatever, you know, that's great. But then I knew that as soon as they got off the phone that, you know, here comes the comparison. Well, why aren't you doing it like this? And why aren't you acting like their daughter, their daughter Mona? Oh, Mona's doing this. Mona's the head of the class. Mona got picked for, you know, the spelling bee. Mona. So I grew to hate her because I was like, you know, well, I bring home A's. I'm an A student. Well, Mona is an A plus student. Like, I'm like, well, Jesus, what about me? So, number one, there's no more Mona-ing of my life anymore. So that's great because we've all grown up, and, you know, every once in a while, you know, I hear something along those lines, but not as much. So it makes me feel that at least in the sanctity of my own home and my own family, I'm not being compared to someone who kind of sort of is like me, but not me at on any level. And how has this affected my life? I mean, I guess it's one of those things, like, I just feel better about existing. Like, I feel like, sometimes I feel like I wish that I did have a time travel machine, that I could go back in time and talk to my younger self and tell my younger self how much good my life will be. That, you know, every time that I feel like I'm an outsider or that I'm not enough, that it's okay, because that's the thing that's going to make you stronger for a time that you're really going to need to be strong. So enjoy the outsiderness right now, because one day you really are going to be an outsider and you're going to be like, oh, this is nothing, not compared to the loneliness and the fear and the anxiety that you had as a kid. This is going to be nothing.
Thanks for sharing that. And it's, you know, great that you're able to live the life that you want. And I know what it's like being compared, or just, you know, your parents just like, well, why don't you do this, right? Because I remember going home and telling my dad I got like a 95 on my math test. And it's, he's just like, well, why didn't you get 100? And I was like, oh my God. It's like,
yes.
I can't please this man. But, you know,
it's awful.
It's something we all go through. And, it, you know, our parents aren't conscious of this either. It's just because of how they're brought up. And, you know, I love my dad for who he is. If it wasn't for him, like, I wouldn't be here today either. But, you know, it's something that we all can relate to. And, you know, Rhett, to the woman who's listening to your episode, she may be in her own journey of self-confidence. What would be that one tip you would give to her?
Oh, wow. If there was one thing that I would have to give to her, ooh, in terms of her self-confidence, I mean, just understand that it's a process, you know, like, just like Rome wasn't built in a day, you know, Picasso's first sketch ever in life was not perfect. You know, I think the problem with our society now is that there's too much emphasis on the final product. You know, like, you see these pictures of all these beautiful women, you know, the Kim Kardashians of the world. Oh my God, she looks so amazing. She must look like that when she first wakes up. You know, all the Beyoncés and all the Lucy Liu's. Now I sound like an Outkast song. But, you know, there's a process behind that. We're not there. The photographers are not there when they're getting dressed in the morning, when they're doing all of that nitty gritty maintenance and they're shaving their legs and brushing their teeth and, you know, they're having a bad hair day. You know, it takes time to get to that point of beauty. And that's the same thing. You know, you have to understand that we're all on an individual journey, and our job is not necessarily to enjoy the final product, to enjoy the journey. And to understand that whatever you do during that journey is going to pay off at the end.
That's a great tip, and it's so true, right? I mean, we all are in our own journey, and, you know, we can't compare ourselves to, like, Kim Kardashian, you know, especially when you hear, like, every day she has, like, a whole makeup team, you know, that does her face.
Exactly.
And does everything, and people don't realize what goes behind the scenes for them to look like that. So it's like, you know, be happy with who you are, be happy with everything that's beautiful about you. So I really love that you mentioned that. And if our listeners wanted to connect with you or get to know a little bit more about you and what you do, is there any links or social media profiles you can share with?
Yes. Well, I have my website, which is still in construction mode. We had to take it down, and then it's going to be going back up pretty soon. But it's blackaneschick.com. That's blackaneschick. C-H-I-C-K. There's also me on social media, on Facebook and Twitter, under Black Anise Chick. And also my actual name, Rhett Thompson. So that's R-H-E-T-T-T-H-O-M-P-S-O-N. You can also hit me up directly, blackanisechick@gmail.com. All of that good, great stuff that's out there.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. And to our listeners, if you want to connect with Rhett, you can also head on over to thetaofselfconfidence.com and search for Rhett's name. Her show notes will pop up along with everything else we talked about. And I just want to thank Rhett for taking the time to share her story with us. So thank you so much.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
It was an honor having you on and share your story. And to our listeners, be on the lookout for another new episode of Another Amazing Woman's Journey to Self-Confidence. And we'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.
Thank you for tuning in to another amazing episode of The Tao of Self-Confidence. Visit our website at thetaoofselfconfidence.com to check out cool resources, blog articles, show recaps, and so much more. Your inner journey to self-confidence awaits.